This is Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Presented by Fasig Tipton.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Saver wins the Derby for Todd Pletcher.
The result will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And dialed in, never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Penna.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, happy to have you with me for the next hour. This is the show trainers listen to, and you are listening throughout North America on Sirius 219, XM 201, and streaming us live or podcast on our HRRN website at horseracingradio.net. Well, I am extremely excited to visit with my guest on today's show. Ever since the 2021 Hall of Fame finalists were announced in late February, I have been preaching what was probably obvious to most of us who follow the sport, that trainer Todd Pletcher was a surefire, cinch, no-brainer, first-ballot Hall of Famer. 1 week ago, that statement became reality for the 53-year-old native of Dallas, Texas, when the announcement was actually made that Todd would join Steeplechase trainer Jack Fisher and Triple Crown winner American Pharoah with a plaque forever enshrined in the National Museum of Racing and Hall of Fame in Saratoga Springs, New York. Todd has joined me many, many times on HRN over the years, but today it is truly my distinct pleasure to say these words for the very first time as I introduce him. Hall of Fame trainer Todd Pletcher, welcome to Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton, my friend.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Boy, that certainly does have a nice ring to it, doesn't it?
It really does, yeah. It's a tremendous honor and very humbled by it.
When we talked before the Kentucky Derby, you told me that this was never a goal of yours when you first started training and throughout your career, but it's now come to fruition. How do you put into words what an honor like this means to you and to your family?
Yeah, it's actually really difficult to put into words, and it means a great deal to me personally, to my entire team. So many people have contributed to this, and so many associates, so many horses, so many owners, so many jockeys. The list goes on and on, but. When I first told my mom and she burst out into tears, the reality hit. But, this is really, really special and means so much to a lot of people.
Tell me about receiving the news that you were officially going to be in the Hall of Fame.
I got a call from John Hendrickson, and, it's similar to some footage I'm sure you've seen from athletes and others who have been inducted into the Hall of Fame. It was congratulations. You've been elected into the National Museum of Racing Hall of Fame, and it was great to hear and an emotional moment.
Yeah, you mentioned your mom and breaking the news to her and how emotional it was for her. I'm sure it was for your entire family. Quite an honor. But you had a quote in the press release that the Museum of Racing sent out after this was announced, and you said that you remembered being 11 or 12 and telling your mom that you wanted to train, and she said that it was wonderful, and from that point on you just never looked back. Tell me more about that conversation when you were so young.
Well, I think, like, I don't know, a lot of parents do this, but my mom used to ask me when I was a little kid always, what do you think you want to do or be when you grow up? And I think, when you're 6 or 7 or 8 or 10 years old, your first thought is, oh, I want to be a doctor or I want to be a fireman or what have you. And I remember having the thought maybe even a little before I told her that, I like what my dad's doing. I love going to the barn, and, you know, I think that's ultimately what I want to do. And so, but I never really said it until I think I was 11 or 12, and she asked me, and I was sort of like testing to see what her reaction was going to be. And you know, she was elated. She said, I think that would be terrific. And so once I kind of had her endorsement, you know, and obviously my dad was training at the time, and so I had his support and endorsement as well, and pretty much never looked back from there, never thought about doing anything else. Thankfully, because I probably wouldn't have been good at anything else. It's fortunate just to be, you know, have two parents that really cared about what I was going to do. And once I decided that, they did everything they could to help me get into a position to potentially succeed.
Talk about the impact that your dad had on you, not just as a young man, but as a horse trainer.
Well, yeah, I mean, he did very well. He was a successful trainer in the Midwest. He was a successful quarter horse trainer before that. So I think as a youngster, you know, I would try to go to the barn with him every weekend, and, you know, any day I didn't have school, and you know, I think you go out there and you're learning, even though you're not really aware that you're learning. You're just sort of, you know, I was walking horses or helping feed, or, you know, just depending on how old I was, how much responsibility I could have. But you're learning as you're going, even though maybe no one's, you know, directly teaching you per se, but you're just absorbing a lot of things and picking up a lot of things as you go along. So that I worked for him long enough that I kind of learned his system, but he also pointed me in the right direction. You know, when I got a little bit older, when I was 16, I spent a summer with Henry Marino, who's a good friend of my dad's and our family, and he's a very successful trainer in the Southern California circuit. So I spent a summer with him, and then I spent a summer with Wayne Lucas and another summer with Charlie Whittingham. And all of that was on, you know, my parents' advice of, you know, try to get out there and learn from some other people and see how they do things and try to absorb as much as you can and take with you as much as you can. And so those were not only great times, but great learning experiences.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned some of those folks too, because nobody gets to this particular level without being surrounded by good people and having good people to learn from. And I know that you're extremely busy with the day-to-day operations of your business, and this has only been out there for about 5 or 6 days now, the news of the Hall of Fame. But have you taken time over the past week or so to reflect on some of the people, or most of the people, who have helped you reach this amazing milestone?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, you know, kind of once I was a nominee, you know, start to reflect on a lot of that. And, you know, I've had some really nice calls and messages from former assistants and plenty of other people that I've worked with or have trained horses for. And it's been a really long list of congratulations from different people that were very, very supportive through, you know, helping get to this point. And so, you know, in some ways, you know, it's amazing how the Wayne Lucas trainer tree kind of continues to expand. And so I guess I'm getting old enough now that I have a bit of at least a branch of my own. But, you know, it all kind of comes back to a lot of guys that have worked for Wayne or have been associated with that program in some way.
I can remember sitting down with Wayne at Saratoga a few years back for this particular show, and Jude Feld and I spent an hour sitting in his office with him talking about his life and his career. But when he talked about all of his assistants that have gone out and made a mark on this sport, he's almost like a proud father when he talks about you and Kieran and Mark Henning and people like that that have done so well. How do you describe Wayne Lucas and the impact that he had on your overall career?
Well, you know, I was so fortunate the way things fell into place when I was a senior in college at the University of Arizona. I think sometime around January or so, I went out to Santa Anita and met with Wayne and told him, you know, that I'd like to get a work for him. And when I graduated college, and so we kind of had somewhat of an informal interview, and he said, you know, you can count on the job when you graduate. Just call me when you graduate, and we'll figure it out then. So, you know, I called him and told him I was, you know, ready to go to work, and he said, okay, why don't you go to Belmont and you can work for my son Jeff there. And I oftentimes think, like, what would have happened if he would have sent me in a different direction or said go to California or go to Arlington or whatever. You know, there's probably a number of different ways it could have fallen, but to work out that way and to get to go to New York and to get to work for Jeff was just, you know, it was a tremendous break for me, because I can't think of anyone who's had more of an influence on my career than Jeff, in terms of he was just such a great coach, and he was a strict disciplinarian. He wanted things done a certain way, and you had to make sure those things were done the right way, or he was going to call you out on it. And it just, you hear a lot of times athletes will say, you know, a particular player brings out the best in another player. And I think Jeff had that ability to bring out the best in people that worked for him. And you know, Wayne was a huge part of that. And he was, and later on, after Jeff had his unfortunate accident, I spent a lot more time working with Wayne. But, you know, that first, like, 3 years or so was really heavily influenced by Jeff during 6 months of the year. And then Kieran McLaughlin was the main assistant during the other 6 months of the year at Belmont. So, I mean, I got to work under two guys that had, you know, they were tremendous horsemen, also had different types of personalities. And, you know, so I was able to learn from Kieran, who is just such a great people person. And he the way he communicated with Wayne and Jeff and the owners, and you know, so I just tried to pick up on, you know, whatever I could from those guys. And so, like I said, I was fortunate to fall into a great situation.
Yeah, and great comments and a great remembrance there of Jeff Lucas. And you mentioned his unfortunate accident. He's no longer with us now. But, you know, quite often, Todd, we'll talk about how a coach or even a boss in that respect can be very difficult on an individual if they see something in them that they think is special, because they want to do everything they can to draw that out of them. You talked about Jeff's approach and how he was very strict in maintaining that operation and teaching you. Do you think that maybe he kind of sensed that there could be something special with Todd Pletcher?
You know, I don't know. I know that we got along well, and you know, I think we had a, you know, good relationship, and so you know, I think he, you know, perhaps saw that I had potential to, you know, to develop into, you know, possibly an assistant trainer at some point. I don't know if felt strongly beyond that, but I definitely felt like, you know, he at least thought I had enough potential to try to, you know, continue to develop me to move up within the ranks in the organization. And so it was, like I said, I mean, it was, he was great all the way around. He's really good with a condition book, and, you know, was willing to talk to me about things like that. And, you know, I tried to not only do the best job I could for him, but I also was always trying to learn more and ask questions and, you know, try to understand why certain things were done a certain way.
We're still about 3 months or so away from the actual Hall of Fame inductions in Saratoga Springs. Have you started to formulate any thoughts or jot down any notes as to what you might want to include in your speech when you stand up there?
Yeah, I have. I've thought about it, and the one thing that I've tried to learn over the years, and being fortunate enough to have some Eclipse Award speeches over the years, the one thing that you always fear is leaving someone out. And so the one thing that concerns me is there's just no way that I can thank everyone who deserves to be appreciated during speech that I think is supposed to last maybe 5 minutes or so. So I'm trying to figure out how to balance that out, and certainly want to thank the people like Jeff who are not here and I can't thank in person, but I also want to make sure everyone who deserves recognition gets it, and certainly don't want to leave anyone out. So I'm trying to determine how to balance that out, and I think one way is to try to thank a lot of the people in person that I have the opportunity to do so.
Visiting with Hall of Fame trainer Todd Pletcher on Trainer Talk presented by Fasic Tipton. Todd, shortly after we launched this show in 2012, you were kind enough to spend some time with us. I'll never forget that program. You talked about finding time to balance your training obligations and your family life, finding time to go to soccer games and those types of things, if you will. How have you been able to find that balance and make it all work for such a long period of time?
Well, to be honest with you, I probably haven't done as good a job with it as I would have liked to, and that's one of the things you reflect back on when, you have children now that are in their 20s, and daughter Hannah, 18, and graduating high school in June, and so, literally in the blink of an eye, their childhoods are over, and they're young adults and getting jobs and off to college, and so. I think the one thing I've always said that's great about our business is that you get to share a lot of things with the family, and they can come to the races, and then they can go to the derbies, and so that's always terrific. But on the flip side of it, there's a lot of sacrifice, as I'm sure there is in any industry that requires a lot of work, and so you miss a lot of events and things that you wish that you could be in two places at one time. But the one thing that I'm blessed with is my wife Tracy is a very devoted mother and terrific mom, and so I was never in a situation where I needed to worry that the kids weren't getting everything that they needed and more. So that from that perspective, we made a really good team that way.
You saddled your first winner in January of 1996. That was at Gulfstream Park, a horse by the name of Majestic Number. There have been so many top name horses and big wins since that moment. I asked you about the people that you're going to have to try to remember when you put together your speech. How about the horses when you think back on your career that are always going to stand out to you?
Yeah, I said this last week when they were asking me. There's so many horses, so many big races, so many big moments, but I really felt like the two horses that helped get my career going more so than any others were More Than Ready and Jersey Girl. And, More Than Ready was sort of the first horse that we had that was a graded stake horse. He was a brilliant two-year-old, and he grabbed headlines, and so I think that really helped. And then Jersey Girl was our first grade one winner and kind of showed that we could compete at the highest level. So I always felt like those two really got our career going, and so they were special. And I've always said that Rags to Riches win in the Belmont is still my favorite win, and it was just such an exciting race. Literally everything that can happen in a race, from the stumble at the start to this stretch long duel, and for a filly to defeat a horse of Curlin's ability level in a classic race and be our first classic win, and just, you know, there's so many emotions that went through during that mile and a half race that it's just so exciting. And I was really, really hoping that, well, I was hoping she would have been inducted into the Hall of Fame already, but when she'd kind of been skipped over for a few years, I thought it would be fitting if maybe she'd get enough votes this year. But I'm still hopeful that she'll eventually get in. I certainly think she deserves it.
I don't think there's any doubt that she'll find her name in there someday. That race, I can remember we broadcast that race on national radio, and it was one of the shining moments of my broadcasting career. Just to the Tom Durkin call, the effort that she put in, it was what horse racing is truly all about, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, I think it captured everything that you enjoy about horse racing.
So if I were to walk into Todd Pletcher's house, and I'm always curious with somebody like yourself, Todd, that's won so many big races, been around so many good horses, what are some of the things that I'm going to see from a memorabilia standpoint, maybe some of your most prized possessions, if you will?
Yeah, I mean, I think most of it is trophies and win photos, and I know that, like, sometimes people will come over and they'll look and say, you know, why do you have all these older photos up when you have newer wins? And to me, it's like the ones back then are the ones that you want to go back and look at, you know, that are 20 years ago or 25 years ago. And then we have a painting in our dining room that the Ackerley brothers had made for Mike Smith and I of Jersey Girl. I love that painting, and it's really well done and captures how beautiful a filly she was. And then in our Saratoga dining room, we actually call that the Jim Dandy dining room, because I think we have 7 wins in the Jim Dandy, and all of those win photos are in there. So, I think your traditional memorabilia of trophies and win photos and a few paintings, and also in that dining room, we have it's a really lovely photo of Keisha Electronic, and it's just a headshot, but it was really cool that the angle he was, just the way he's standing, and a horse like that is one that probably wouldn't make most people's list of the best horses that we've had, but in some ways, you know, we really enjoyed having that horse, and you know, what he was able to accomplish after we claimed him was a lot of fun for us.
Will you ever go back and watch replays of some of your big wins or some of the horses that really stand out to you? Will you just go back in the evenings maybe sometime and start watching replays? Do you ever do that?
Yeah, I tell you one that I go back and every once in a while, if you need a little pick-me-up, I'll go back and watch Uncle Mo's Breeders' Cup Juvenile win. And it's so impressive to watch, because you can just see when he comes off the turn, and you can literally just see him drop to another level and just extend away from the field. And Trevor Denman's call, I think he says, and John Velasquez just had to point him in the right direction. It was just, yeah. So every once in a while, you need a little pick me up, I'll do something like that.
You don't think of Todd Pletcher needing a pick-me-up from time to time, but I guess there's times even for a Hall of Fame trainer that you have to.
You always need a pick-me-up, for sure.
Todd Pletcher here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, down to about the final 5 minutes, Todd, and I wish we had another 2 hours to spend together, because there is so much that we could continue talking about. But one thing I want to ask you is, you said at the beginning of the interview, you said that you were glad that you pursued training horses as a profession because you didn't think you'd be good at anything else. What if you didn't do this, what else do you think you might end up, you might be doing right now?
Yeah, it's a great question. Like I said, I you know, and having kids that are at that age where they're starting to try to identify maybe what, you know, they're really going to do for their career. I mean, it's such an intimidating position to be in, especially when you don't know. So I always feel blessed that I knew at an early age. But, you know, I like the competition, so I'd have to think it would have been in some sort of sports area, you know, either through coaching or you know, something like that. But because people ask me a lot of times, you know, what do you enjoy about your job, about horse racing? And for me, I love the idea that the results are very concrete. You know, like what you're doing is either working or it's not, and you're gonna know when you go over and compete in the afternoon. And so I enjoy that part of it, you know, having a goal and seeing if you can achieve it.
Well, we talked about so many of your big wins. At least I kind of gave people a cursory overview of so many of those big wins. Let's talk about a race that you have yet to win, because this is Preakness week, and the one Triple Crown race that's eluded you is the Preakness. Unbridled Honor going to look to give you that first one coming up on Saturday. What makes the Middle Jewel so tricky and so difficult to claim?
Well, you know, I think we've obviously taken a lot of shots in the Derby and you know, some of them long shots, but we've also been pretty conservative when it comes to turning those horses around in 2 weeks for the Preakness. And I think it's one of the reasons why we've had pretty good success in the Belmont, I think, with 3 wins and 6 seconds, and most of those horses, you know, ran in the Derby, and then we just kind of focused on the Belmont. And, you know, Belmont Park is home for us, and it's, to me, you know, aside from the Derby and maybe some Breeders' Cup races, it's one of my favorite races, and you know, I love preparing for it. I love the mile and a half challenge of it, and so I think, not to slight the Preakness, it's not one that we've really focused on, especially with Belmont being, you know, our home track and where we live and where the kids grew up, and you know, it's kind of a coveted race for our family.
In 60 seconds or less, Todd, why can Unbridled Honor win the Preakness on Saturday?
Well, I think Unbridled Honor could win the Preakness if he gets a favorable pace set up, and you know, he's a horse that doesn't get involved really early on, but he has a good closing kick. If they'll go fast enough and come back to him a little bit, I think he will handle the mile and 3/16, and he will be finishing up well. So he needs to get a fortunate trip, and he needs to get some pace to run at. I liked his last work at Churchill before we came to New York. He worked in company with Promise Keeper, who was able to win the Peter Pan. And he was very strong in that work, so hopefully that's a good sign.
Hall of Fame trainer Todd Pletcher here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton. Todd, can't thank you enough for the time. You're always very gracious, and appreciate it. Congratulations on all your success on that Hall of Fame honor. It's well-deserved. You deserve every bit of it, my friend.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate that.
All right, Todd Pletcher here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. What a fantastic 30 minutes. If you missed any portion of it, don't worry. You can check out the podcast at horseracingradio.net, or you can continue listening. Going to replay the entire 30-minute visit with Todd Pletcher in the second half of the show. Stay with me. Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton, continues next.
Phasic Tipton is bringing the heat to Miami with the Phasic Tipton Gulfstream Sale of selected two-year-olds in training. The nation's premier two-year-olds in training sale will be held on March 31st after the Florida Derby over Gulfstream Park's dirt racetrack. The sale has a history of producing the sport's very best horses, including last year's Grade 1 Arkansas Derby winner Nadal, as well as top horses Bellafina, Dona Veloce, Yapin, and Share the Ride. You will find no higher concentration of quality in any two-year-old sale in 2021. The Phasic Tipton Gulfstream Sale, March 31st at Gulfstream Park. Where will you be?